been talking about a principle that can literally change your life. It's called the principle of the path. And it says very simply, our direction, not our intentions, determine our destination every time. Say that with me. Our direction, not our intentions, determine our destination every time. It happens in our financial walk. It happens in our relationships. It happens in our spiritual walk. Unless you're moving in the right direction, you're not going to end up where you want to be in life. How many times have we awakened and said, how in the world did I get here? How did I get myself in this mess in my life? Why is my life a series of repeated mistakes and failures? Well, the answer really is pretty straightforward. The path we are on leads to a destination. There's a destination to the path that we walk. Now, does this mean that when bad things happen in our life that we're on the wrong road? Not necessarily. Jesus told us that in this world we will have troubles. We will have some problems. But if we're on the right path, we should be confirmed by His comfort and by His presence, even if we're going through difficulties and trials. A few years ago, I received a phone call from a pastor in a neighboring state. I hardly recognized his voice. It sounded lifeless and broken. And he began to tell me a story of betrayal by a friend that he loved, a lost job, a career that had been shattered. And I told him I would meet him, and I met him in a city close to where he lived. And we talked for a while. I discovered that when pain is great in our life, we need to share it. And if we don't share it, then it really can't be healed. It's hard to heal something that is not revealed. And so for about 2.5 hours, he talked and I listened mainly. And at the conclusion of that time, I finally said, tell me, how are you doing spiritually? And his candor caught me a little off guard. He replied, I haven't read a book in weeks. I can't read the Bible. I can't even pray. I wasn't used to that kind of candor. Usually when you ask people, how are you doing? They'll say, well, I'm hanging in there, whatever that means, you know. And this response came from a man of the book and a man of prayer. I can't even pray. And at that moment, I made a commitment in my heart that, like the friends of Moses, I wanted to hold up his arms, my friend's arms that were too short to reach to God. I'm convinced that most of us, at some point in our lives, have been or will be where my friend was that day. By the way, he got back on the right path. He became a preaching or homiletics professor at Phillips Seminary and then at Asbury Seminary. It's important that when we're stuck in our spiritual journey, when we're in a dark place, that when we find ourselves on a path that we suspect is going to have a bad ending, that we remember some things that are true about God. It's important to know that. The heart of God is His love for us and His love for His people. Max Lucado says the diamond verse of the Bible is, for God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him shall not perish, but will have everlasting life. When Jesus was asked for the greatest commandment among all the commandments in the Bible, He said very simply in Matthew 22, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. John Townsend, in his wonderful little book, God Will Make a Way, says, it's not what loving God does for God. It's what loving God does for us who love Him. When we love God with everything within us, we open our hearts, we open our minds to His love and His grace and His support. God will empower and God will heal whatever parts of our lives we make available to Him. The background of the book of Joshua in the Old Testament is that a people of Israel have moved out of captivity in Egypt. They've been led out by their leader Moses. And they have left to go to the promised land, the land that God has promised to his people. But because of fear and because of disobedience and because of lack of faith, their path has not led them to the promised land. In fact, their path has led them in circles for 40 years in the desert. And Moses, the original leader, the one who had led them out, the spiritual guru, had died. And Joshua has been given the task of now getting the people of God back on path, back to the promised land. The promised land in Joshua has been described as a place of milk and honey, an amazing place. John's gospel describes the promised land for us as an abundant life. What does that look like? Back in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon wrote these words that kind of outline what an abundant life might be like. I know that there's nothing better for me than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all of his toil. This is the gift of God. Finding happiness, finding a way to help others, having enough to live on, enjoying our vocation, our calling. As Christ followers, are these things happening on the path that we're walking today, the path that we're on? Mark Buckman says that many Christians that he knows are kind of stuck. They're stuck spiritually. Church has become kind of a routine for them. There's no passion. There's no excitement. They're surprised when God shows up and even more surprised that they recognized it. He says many of these people actually are experiencing none of these things that Solomon talks about in Ecclesiastes. They're not living in this place. They're not happy. They have no systematic method of helping others. They don't even necessarily want to help anybody else. They're overspent and underfinanced, and they have great stress. They hate their job and think only of retirement or finding something else to do. The result is there's little contentment or peace in their lives. I want us to understand that the promised land is not just something for the people of Israel thousands of years ago. There's a path that leads to the fulfillment of God's promises in all of our lives. There's a place, there's a destination where we find these characteristics: a place of peace, a place of contentment, a place of significance, and a place of abundance and joy. But yet, too many of us are floundering in the desert, kind of going in circles. You left the path of sin and brokenness, but somehow you've not found the path of spiritual fulfillment and intimacy in your life. Maybe you've kind of given up on that. Other people seem so close to God, that's never going to be true of me. I just can't quite seem to get there. I can't quite seem to find that. So you've kind of settled for coming to church. The principle of the path teaches us that direction, not intention, will determine our destination. If you feel you're missing something important in your spiritual walk, you might need to change the path. You might need to go a new direction. Joshua begins chapter 1 with this devastating news. Moses is dead. And you say, what's the big deal? He was an old man. It's a big deal because he was the connection with God. He's the one that went up on the mountain and got the Ten Commandments. He's the one that has led the people. He's the one, when they have questions, they don't know what to do, they go to him. When they need someone to pray for them, they go to him. When they've got an argument and they need to settle it, they go to him. And now he's dead. It's a spiritual crisis. I've noticed that when grandpa dies, or mom dies, or dad dies, if they have been the spiritual leader in your family, all of a sudden there's a vacuum. What do we do now? Who do we ask now? And part of the problem is we've relied so heavily on their spiritual guidance that we failed to develop our own path with God, our destination with God. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give them. I encounter a lot of people who are still looking to yesterday. I still encounter churches that are still living in yesterday. But it's time to enter God's promised land today in our lives. Ask yourself, is there any part of my life that I'm kind of hanging on to and looking for and wishing and regretting that's preventing me from experiencing the fullness of God in my life? Whatever's in your past that's blocking God's future for you, we need to let it go and change the path. There's another lesson we learned from Joshua that we can take with us as we evaluate the path that we're walking and he's called us to follow. It's interesting, Joshua is told to stake his claim. Now, when I was in seminary, I did seminary in Oklahoma, of all places. I'd never been to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's kind of like Indiana. It's flat. And the wind really does come whipping down the plains, you know, a lot. And so I'm in Oklahoma, and I don't know anything about Oklahoma. I begin to learn about Oklahoma's history. When Oklahoma was settled, they had all the covered wagons and the horses and the people on foot at the border. And when they fired the gun, they all rushed into Oklahoma to stake out their land. They literally had stakes, and they would find a place where they wanted to live, and they would drive their stakes down. And this is my property that's been given to me. They raced to get there. It was a new beginning for people who had lost their way, and those early pioneers entered there with hope that on this new place, a new life can begin. Joshua's story is kind of like those pioneers. I will give you every place where you set your foot. God makes that same promise to us today. He wants to give us power and authority in every part of our life. In the book of Genesis, it's called dominion. Paul describes God's desire with these words: in all these things, we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. You see, God doesn't want you just to hang on till you get to heaven. He wants you to succeed and thrive on the journey. He does not want you to be stuck spiritually or in any other area of your life. In other words, we're not controlled by our circumstances because God is greater than our circumstances. And even when your circumstances are less than perfect, God is still perfect. And He is still able. If you want your home life to be better, if you want your relationship with your wife to be better, if you want your finances to get better, you have to start claiming your families for Christ. You have to start practicing God's stewardship. Take a survey of the areas where your life touches. School, Little League, golf course, neighborhood, your health, your finances, and on. God wants us to know that we can have victory in these very ordinary parts of our lives when we follow His path. Does that mean that we never have storms? Does that mean we never lose? No, Joshua had storms and Joshua lost some battles, but he lived life in victory. He lived his life in the shadow of God's provision. I like that term. As Christ followers, we live our lives in the shadow of God's provision. That certainly applies in your spiritual walk. You can experience love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. These are the inheritance of every Christ follower. He's just waiting for us to claim our inheritance. God made this amazing promise that if we walk His path, He promised that He will be with us. His presence will be with us. In Joshua 1:5, as I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And just in case you think, well, that's Old Testament stuff, what is Hebrews 13:5? It echoes those words, the same promise. Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And then Matthew 28:20 even makes it more clear. And surely I am with you always. How long? To the very end of the age. That might not mean a whole lot to you at this moment, but let me promise you, there will come a day, there will come a moment that that promise of God's presence will mean everything to you. A few years ago, I was sitting by the bedside of May Pavey. May had just come out of some very serious surgery, touch and go. I'm talking with her husband, Marvin, who himself is battling cancer. And this couple have been together on the journey for 57 years of marriage. And Marvin began to tell me his story. He'd worked on the railroads most of his life, and when he'd get home from the railroads on the weekends on Friday night, he'd load up the family. They'd travel 100 miles to a church somewhere, and he and his family would sing. They were gospel singers. And then they'd drive back home that same night. Sometimes it was a weekday night, and they'd drive back home, and the kids would go to school, and he'd go back to work the next morning. They did that for years. And I'm sure there were days that the promise of God's presence meant everything to Marvin, his protection, his guidance. But I think it was never more precious and never more important than as their earthly life moved towards its conclusion and their forever lives approached, that He is with us. He will never leave us nor forsake us. Whether you realize it or not, and whether you speak it out or not, you're never out of God's sight and out of His concern. You're never out of His care. What God said to Joshua and to the people of Israel, He says to us. Every step of Israel, every place you go, I'm with you in your victories, in your defeats. I'm with you on the mountain. I'm with you when you're so low you have to look up to see the curb. I'm with you on bright days and on the darkest days. You can count on me. And you say, but I don't feel your presence. I'm with you. But I don't deserve your presence. I'm with you. He's with you when you wake in the morning. He's with you in the routines of your day. Because He's with us on the journey, to get into God's presence is not a long journey. He's always a prayer away, waiting for us. The early followers of Jesus were called people on the way. In the early days of the Church of God, sometimes they referred to themselves as people of the way. Following God's way, we need to forget our past, those things that hindered us, those things that we regret, those broken moments from our lives. And we have to step into His precious present that He offers to each of us. We can claim the promises He makes to us in every circumstance of our lives. This realization moves us from being people who are stuck spiritually to being passionate followers of Jesus. And then the very best part of the whole thing is, we don't make this journey alone. We're not on this path by ourselves. Following Jesus on the path always means there are other people on the path with us. I was sharing with our Bible study Wednesday night. We were concluding the book of Acts. In the 27th chapter of Acts, the Apostle Paul has been arrested by the Jews. and then brought before the Romans, been beaten, and they want to try him. And he says, wait a minute, I'm a Roman citizen. I appeal to Caesar. And so they put him on a boat to go to Rome. And it's a crazy boat ride. They have a lot of problems. They finally wreck the boat, and it sinks, and he's saved by God's grace, and the people are saved by his grace. But all along the trip, it was a long trip to Rome by boat, he encounters, every time they put in a port and every time they stop somewhere, he encounters believers, people of the way. And they encourage Paul, and they minister to him, and they bless him along the way. Through the storms, through the shipwrecks, God always provides people to help Paul. I mentioned that what is true for Paul is also true for us. Just as I prayed for my friend when he was so low, he could no longer pray, we all need people to encourage us and pray for us and to lift our arms when they're too short. And there are times that we need to pray for others and encourage them. You see, the greatest danger of the Christian path today is there are people who think they can make it alone. You know, I talk a lot about needing to be part of the fellowship and being in church. I don't do that so I can count your noses and feed my ego. I do that because it's God's plan. It's God's path. It's his design that we all need. The church is God's design to provide the help that we need in following his path. It's a path that calls us to encourage others and to be encouraged and to pray for others. It was never a path designed to be walked alone by ourselves. Lately, I've been reflecting a lot about connectiveness in the body of Christ. Recently, actually a week ago, we had our area pastors, state leaders from around the United States that met here in Daytona. These are pastors that oversee pastors and encourage them and train them and equip them. And they all met here. Some of them were my friends. And I got them into Aunt Catfish, 50 of them. And they were so grateful they let Brent and I come along for the ride. And so we're at this dinner at Aunt Catfish. And while we're there, I see Bob. He's a friend of mine that we used to serve on the pension board together, the Church of God Pension Board. And I hadn't seen him for a couple years. I knew him when he was a pastor in Michigan and in Ohio, but now he's one of our national pastors. He serves on our national team. And we talked briefly. And then after this thing was over, the following Saturday, I got an email from Bob. He said, Steve, there's something very exciting that's happened in our family, an exciting development. My daughter, Erin, who's the teaching pastor at one of our large churches in Indianapolis, she and her husband, Dan, got a phone call, and they were to pick up a little baby girl in Daytona, of all places. Now, they had three sons, and they wanted a daughter, and they'd begun the adoption process 1 month ago. So they were totally unprepared for this. Erin was supposed to preach last Sunday at her church. But all of a sudden, they had to pack their bags and head to Daytona. And he goes, they're staying at a motel, and they've got to be here 8 to 10 days or more. And the problem is, Dan's got to go back because we got three boys. And I was just wondering, Steve, do you know anywhere? They can't afford it. Do you know anywhere they could stay? Well, this church did something pretty amazing a few years ago. They fixed an apartment for ministers and for missionaries called The Hiding Place. And last week, it was open. And so I was able to say, yeah, she can come here with the baby. By the way, the baby's beautiful. And so I met Dan and Erin in our church parking lot, and Erin was blown away that people she had never met and never seen, a church she had never been in, would care for her and her new little daughter. But we're on the same path. We're family. We're followers of Jesus. And when you're traveling the path that Jesus has set out for you, the good news is He's with you. And not only is He with you, we're all with you. We do this thing together. If you're wandering in the desert this morning, you don't know Jesus as Savior and Lord, let me invite you to get on a path that changes your life forever. I mean literally forever, eternally. And if you're a Christ follower this morning, but you're at a level far below the promise that He's given us, if you feel stuck, you've kind of lost your passion, you just kind of come to church, I would remind you that He hasn't left you, that there are millions on this path with you, and God is anxiously waiting for you to experience the joy and passion in your life that He had planned for you all along. So what are you waiting for? I want you to listen to the words of John as shared in the Message. I like this particular paraphrase of this verse. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here, working while the sun shines. When the night falls, the workday is over. Stake your claim to His promises. Claim His presence. And realize you're not alone. You're not walking alone. Direction, not intentions, will determine your destination every time. Make sure you're on the path, because the journey is so significant. And the destination, oh my, it's beyond our wildest dreams. Would you pray with me?